How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 80 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there, and you can leave a review once you're on that page, too. And find us on audioboom.com as well. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. You can see a whole rundown of Steven Adams and Enes Kanter reading the kids and stories from that entire exchange, which was just wonderful. Like, Steven Adams said like 48 different hilarious things in about a 30-minute span. It was just a phenomenal showing from Steven Adams, like a Western Conference semifinal style showing from Steven Adams during that reading to elementary school kids at Cleveland Elementary School, which was just, it was awesome. It was so funny. I was laughing really hard as I watched that. Anyway, I'm on every day of the week now, Monday through Friday. You can get your preview of that Thunder Raptors game up on normantranscript.com over at Thunder Road too. Just go to the sports tab, click on Thunder Road, and it's right there. Just like always, I'm here for you every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Today, I'm going to preview that Raptors game for a little bit. Thunder now 6-1 on the season after that 97-85 victory over the Heat on Monday. Raptors 4-2, recently lost to the Sacramento Kings. Raptors obviously a good team. Made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, brought back a pretty similar team. DeMar Carroll was hurt for a lot of last year. They have him healthy. He's struggled a little bit, though. But DeMar DeRozan, he's been awesome. Like, he's, even for those who aren't the biggest of DeMar DeRozan fans, you know, the people who, he doesn't really shoot threes, so he can be a little bit controversial in terms of the way he plays. You know, he gets to the line a lot, which is great, but he's a decent amount of long twos, a decent amount of shots that are inefficient, but he's been efficient on those shots this year no matter what. He's getting to the line as much as ever, leading the league in scoring, almost 34 points a game, leading the league in scoring. So he's been excellent. He's been about as good as you could want. And he's been propping up this defense. So this offense. Like, this is an offense that's been efficient so far in the first six games. And that's really because of DeRozan. Because DeMar Carroll's numbers have been really bad. And to start the season. And Patrick Patterson's numbers are way down. Kyle Lowry, who is conventionally thought of as the Raptors' best player and is maybe one of the six best point guards in the NBA, just a really good two-way player, defends, runs an offense, shoots, scores. I mean, he does everything. He's a great player. He hasn't really been making shots to start the season. I mean, look, we're talking about six games. This doesn't project anything on the Raptors. The Raptors will be good this year, and they will have a good offense this year. But they've had some guys who have been struggling to make shots out of the gate. And DeRozan, I mean, just shows how well he's played. I mean, he's been unbelievable to start the year. Andre Roberson is probably going to be guarding him a decent amount, so that'll be a tough task for Roberson if he continues to play like the way he's been playing. It's a very isolation-heavy team. What's interesting about the Raptors is you watch them play, just by their style, you wouldn't guess that they're consistently a really good offensive team. I think they were fifth or sixth or something like that in points per possession last year. Really good number, one of the more efficient offenses in the league. But they isolate a lot. Lowry isolates a lot. DeRozan isolates a lot. They take a decent amount of long twos. There's not a ton of ball movement in the offense. So stylistically, you wouldn't think it's a great offense, but it is. It's always a good offense under Dwayne Casey. They're always efficient. Sometimes they stall in the playoffs. Sometimes that ends up happening, and it may be in part because of that style against certain opponents, not against everybody, but against certain opponents that can hurt them. The reliance on some of the things that they rely on in terms of isolation ball and, and forcing free throws. Forcing free throws is not necessarily unsustainable in the playoffs, but some of the ways that you can force free throws can be less sustainable in the playoffs when teams understand how to guard you better. And the Raptors have struggled with that in certain years in the past. Still, Eastern Conference Finals last year, had a really nice season, even if they did kind of sleepwalk their way to the semifinals in the East, or the finals in the East, I should say. They beat Miami in the semifinal. I'm interested to see how Andre Robertson does guarding DeRozan. Robertson's been awesome this year. He's having such a good defensive year. And I think he's a really good DeRozan defender, because DeRozan makes his living getting to the foul line. Like, that's really when he beats you, because you can force him into inefficient shots. And the way he makes up his efficiency is by getting to the line, whether through pump fakes, whether through getting to the rim, just because he's so athletic. Like, he makes it up getting to the line 8, 9, 10, 11 times in a game. And he's a good free throw shooter, so he's going to make up that efficiency there. But if you don't put him on the line, you can force him into a high volume, low efficiency night. And that's something that Andre Robertson can do. He can make guys uncomfortable guarding the ball. He doesn't foul all that often. I think Andre Robertson, obviously it's a tough cover for Andre Robertson because DeRozan's been great this year. But I also think it's a really tough matchup for DeRozan, assuming that Robertson is the guy who's going to be guarding him. I don't think that's a great matchup in DeRozan's direction either. And if Andre Robertson does hold DeRozan down, now look, DeRozan, with the way he's playing, if he plays really well, he's going to put up numbers. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter who's guarding you, you're just going to put up your numbers. But if Andre Robertson holds DeRozan to just, he's going to put up points. But if Andre Robertson holds him to a relatively inefficient night with the way that he scored coming out, I think that says a lot about Andre Robertson, and I think that's a real possibility. All right, let's get some Twitter questions. Let's do this. From Jeet Patel, first one. Do you think the Thunder will pursue Chris Bosch if he deals with his current contract situation in Miami? So for those who don't know, Chris Bosch is still under contract with the Miami Heat, but he hasn't played since the middle of last year. He's got the blood clots. The Heat are not going to let him play. He's not medically cleared. You know, it's a, depending on who you talk to, it varies in terms of danger with Bosch coming back, but just about everybody will tell you that it's a risk for Bosch to come back and play basketball. I really like Chris Bosch. He's a Hall of Famer in my book. He's a likable personality. I hope safety is his first priority. I really do, because you don't want to see anything other than Chris Bosch being healthy for a long, 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 long time. So I hope safety is his priority going forward. I really do. But let's say, for this, the sake of this hypothetical scenario, Chris Bosch ends up being out in Miami for whatever the reason. He hits free agency market. Are the Thunder interested? You know, from a source perspective, I don't know. So that one, I don't know. From a roster perspective, I mean, look, Chris Bosch can still ball. The Thunder have a lot of bigs, so I would say no. But Chris, if the question is, do you think Chris Bosch can still play basketball and help a team? Absolutely. He was averaging like 21 on a good team last year. He was the best player on a team that got the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference before he got hurt in the middle of the year. So yeah, I mean, I think every team in the league would be. But I'm using this question more as a way to say, I hope Chris Bosch is okay. I hope Chris Bosch ends up okay. I understand the need for competition. I do. I understand how players can be wired, and you just kind of need that stuff. I hope and you can't tell somebody you don't know how to live their life, of course. But I want to see Chris Bosch be okay down the line. Chris Bosch is somebody who can do anything with his life. He doesn't have to be. Like, some people have to be basketball players. Like, I kind of have to be a basketball writer. I don't think I can really do another job. Like, I kind of have to be an NBA writer. It's just like the job. It was kind of like my calling. I kind of had to. Not that, like, the job chose me, but just, like, it's the thing I can concentrate on best. Other things, I'm going to get distracted, and I'm not going to do as well. Like, Chris Bosch doesn't need to be an NBA player. Chris Bosch can do a lot of things really well. He's smart, and he's an interesting person. Like, he can do a lot of different things, and I I hope he ends up okay. From Cole Hickson, how many Thunder-related how many Thunder-related puns do you have saved in your drafts folder? Oh, you have no idea. I actually do have some saved, I think. I'm just really trying to get people to call. My latest one, I just really want fans to refer to Steven Adams and to his hook shots as Captain Hooks. Like, can we get that going? The OKC Thunder account tweeted that out the other day. I was really proud. I was really happy. I want to get that going. I really want to turn that into a thing. Like, how can they not? How can they not be Captain Hooks? He is... It started because Lee Jenkins was talking on Zach Lowe's podcast about how Steven saw a guy dressed up as Captain Hook, and the two of them just kind of looked at each other like they were looking in the mirror. And he started shooting his hook shot. That's got to be Captain Hook. So let's make that happen. I'm rallying the Locked On Thunder troops to go Captain Hook shots. Let's make Captain Hook shots a thing. From Vic, real basketball question. We'll talk some real basketball. Andre Robertson has been tremendous. Is it realistic to think he can make all-NBA defensive team? Now, I asked this question to Andre, actually. Not quite in this phrasing, but I asked him because Andre had mentioned at the beginning of the season that one of his goals for this year is to make an all-defense team. And I asked him how he thought he was progressing toward that goal. I asked this to him on Tuesday. And he kind of responded, very typical, cliched response. You know, he's thinking about short-term goals. He's not thinking about, you know, stuff at the end of the year. He'll worry about that when the end of the year comes. That kind of stuff. That was the paraphrase. I was hoping he'd say that he was on his way there. Because I don't think that would be arrogant if he said that. I think if a dude says that he thinks he's playing great and he actually is playing great, then that's great to hear. Boast that. I know he thinks he's playing great. He has to. He is. His defense has been so fantastic this year. Like, I didn't ask that question because I wanted to catch him in saying something. Like, I was hoping he would say something. I was hoping he'd give me, like, basically the same opinion of himself that pretty much anybody who has studied him this year would give, which is that he has been a fantastic defensive player. He was always really good defensive player, of course. I kind of think he's at another level now. I really think he's about as good of a perimeter defender as you're going to find. Now, there are a couple guys who are better. Kawhi Leonard's better, but like Robertson is in that tier. And yes, I do think he's all defense caliber. I do. Now it's been seven games and things can change. And you know, we're talking about a small sample size, but looking at the way his versatility. Like, he doesn't just guard the ball. He's great guarding the ball, and he can guard a bunch of different positions. And you can switch with him and all that kind of stuff. And he's great guarding the ball, but that's not, like, his only defensive value. It's not even close. It's not even close to his only defensive value. He's a really good team defender. He's good in passing lanes. He's helping as well as he ever has. Like, he is a really, really wonderful perimeter defender, and he has so much to do with propping the Thunder into becoming a top five defense this year. Like, he has so much to do with it. Him and Adams are so good now. You have those two guys on the floor for a bunch of the game, and you're going to have a really good defense. Like, I think those guys are good enough now to where, especially with, as long as you don't have three horrible defenders next to them, you're going to have a good chance at a good defense if you have those two guys. Now, actually making the all-defense team and playing at an all-defense level are two different things. Problem is with all-defense is that it's really a reputation thing. It's stupid. It shouldn't be like that. Unfortunately, that's the reality of it. A lot of these awards are based on reputation, and that one might be based on reputation about as much as any other one. Andre Robertson got one vote for all-defense last year. Actually, Russell Westbrook got more all-defense votes last year than Andre Robertson did, which was a real surprise to me. I would not have guessed that was going to happen before the voting came out, but that's the way that it came out. Russell Westbrook got more than Andre Robertson, which I didn't expect. Now, I don't think that will be the case this year. I think Robertson is certainly earning a reputation to where he'll get votes, for sure. He's going to get more votes than he got last year. Like, it's not like going to be one vote or him off the ballot or anything like that. He'll get votes. People are going to put his name down because he's that good. But I think you need to build on reputation. Like, he's kind of a specialist. He is a specialist. And specialists who make it on, They build up for a few years. Often they kind of have a character, like Tony Allen is a character, and you know, people talk about him as vicious, and he's got that personality, and so people just kind of know about him. But it even took a couple of years before Tony Allen made it. He probably should have made it for a couple of years before he actually made it. Now, Tabo Cephalosha made a team when he was with the Thunder. That's a good example. And the thing is, if the Thunder finish, you know, I don't know, they're third or fourth in defense right now. I don't know if they're going to finish that high. But for the sake of argument, let's say they do. Let's say they do finish third in defense or something. Like, if they finish third in defense, people are going to look at them. Because the voters do look at offensive defensive efficiency now. They do look at it for that stuff. And if they're third in defense, the voters are going to look at that and they're going to say, like, all right, this team was third in defense. This is one of the best defensive teams in the entire league. Like, who was responsible for this? And the two answers to that will be Steven Adams and Andre Roberson. So he'll get votes that way. Maybe that's a way he could sneak on. I don't know if he could do it because so much of it is based on reputation. And again, that's like, I'm not arguing that's fair. It shouldn't be like that. People should be more educated in their votes. People should base it more on what's happening in the 2016-17 season and solely that. Not arguing anything other than that. That's 100% the way it should be. It's the way it's supposed to be. But it's just unfortunately not the way it is. And reputation is not the only issue here either. I mean, look, there are other factors here too. Like, Roberson could end up playing 24 minutes a game or something like that by the end of the year. If you're playing great defense in 24 minutes, that's awesome. But if someone else is playing great defense in 32 minutes, he could even play a little bit worse than the guy who's playing in 24 and could deserve all defense more because he's doing it in, what, a third more time, right? He's doing it in 8 more minutes. That factors, like number of minutes that you're going to play out there affects how often you're impacting the game on defense. You're playing, you know, two-thirds of the game instead of half the game. That's a big difference. That's a big deal. So that's something that'll factor in too. And there are a lot of guys who are like all defense good who don't get talked about in the all defense category. Like, it's one of those weird things where I think you can say there are only 10 slots, but like there are more than 10 guys who are good enough to be there. Like, the Thunder just played a team that starts another specialist too. Luke Bamute. Luke Bamute is, I think you can make an argument he's all-defense good. He's not going to make an all-defense team, but he's, you know, part of that is because of the minutes. He just won't play enough minutes. There's just no way he's going to play his 18 minutes or whatnot. But he's a guy like Roberson where he plays that similar role and guards a ton of positions, and he'll guard fours, and he'll guard point guards, and he'll guard threes, and he'll just guard a bunch of different guys. And there are guys like that that you'll find around the league who are just awesome at that. A lot of it will come just down to minutes. A lot of it really does, because it's hard to put a guy on all defense if he's only playing like 24 minutes a game, 25 minutes a game. Like, it's hard to justify that if somebody else, like, that was one of the issues with Andrew Bogut. Andrew Bogut is a great defender, but the last few years, it's a little harder to put him on there because he's only playing 20 some odd minutes a game. That just makes it harder. I think that's a legitimate argument in favor of a guy who's going to play 30 something minutes and is going to help his team more in that time. And I think that could end up hurting him. But in terms of the way that he's playing, in terms of the caliber of defense that he's playing so far through 7 games, yeah, I'm cool with saying it's all defense, caliber defense. He's been awesome. He's having a great year, I think. He has really been an overall net positive for this team. I don't think there's any question about that. Finally, from Will Norton. How have you felt about Samaje Christen's play so far? Is it possible that Samaje is a better fit for the Thunder than Cameron Payne? Look, I mean, I think Cameron Payne is going to come back. I think people kind of forget. Cameron Payne is going to be good. Cameron Payne is talented. Now, Samaje has been pretty decent. Like, I think he's probably a good third point guard. He's young. He's athletic. He defends hard. They're playing him at the one and then kind of at, you know, not really the two. Like, positions don't really exist anymore. So I feel silly saying he's playing the one and the two. But, like, he's playing, like, you know, an off guard. A little bit more of an off-ball-y role next to a point guard or next to Victor Oladipo, maybe. He's playing that role a little bit more. Billy Donovan has used him as a defensive sub for end of game situations. Like, that's an interesting thing. Maybe that's a role that he still continues to fill when Payne is back. Like, you know, 17 seconds left in the game, you guys need to stop. You go out there and you go out there with Samaje Christen. Like, maybe that's a role that he could fill. But no, I think Payne is going to get that spot when he comes back. Look, Christen does some things nicely. I thought he created nicely. He made some really good passes into the corners to get some threes during that game against Miami. He got to the hoop pretty well. He got out running okay, played some decent defense. He's not bad on the ball. He's long. He fights hard. Like, he's pretty quick. He's been good. Like, he's done a good job. I think he's been better than Ronnie Price would have been. I feel confident in making that statement. Not in love with all the shot selection, but, like, he's been good. He's been solid. I think he's exceeded some expectations in certain ways, for sure. That being said, like, Cameron Payne was their first-round pick last year. You're going to give Cameron Payne a shot. Cameron Payne is in his early 20s, too, and had moments where he looked like he was going to be a real good player last year. I'm pulling him just because he got hurt. I hate it when people say, just because someone, you should never lose your job to injury. I don't like it when people say that. I don't think it's true. I think there are times where you can lose your job to injury. Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. But, like, you don't even need to think about it like that. You can just think some other dude was given an opportunity and he took the job. He won it. Like, how are you going to sit? How are you going to sit somebody who's playing so well? But it's not like Kristen is, you know, playing like Russell Westbrook or anything like that. Like, I think Payne deserves his shot. He deserves his spot in the rotation. He's also somebody who can, in an ideal world, can shoot. Big deal. Thunder needs someone who can shoot a three. So in an ideal world, he can shoot. He can provide some more offense. And he's also a guy who, like, the Thunder hope can play next to Russell Westbrook, who the Thunder hope can play in two-point guard lineups. Like, they're not just randomly doing it with Kristen. That's something they want to phase in. At Summer League, they were playing Kristen and Payne next to each other during a lot of Summer League. And the reason that they were doing that was so both of those guys could get comfortable playing next to point guards, because that was something they wanted to phase into their team a little bit more this year and in the future, with Payne playing next to guys. Obviously, they drafted Payne in the first round. They thought he was going to be able to play next to Russell Westbrook, because Lord knows they're hoping to keep Russell Westbrook. So Payne could get some minutes next to Westbrook. Now, I don't know if that means that Kristen completely leaves when Payne's back, because I think there are some ways he can contribute. Like I said, maybe some late-game defensive possessions where Donovan feels like he's a good matchup. Maybe some other moments. Payne could be inconsistent. He was inconsistent last year. But one thing that we've seen from Billy Donovan is that Billy Donovan is going to trust his ability to adjust. That is a distinct Billy Donovan trait. He's going to go with one rotation one night. He's going to go with another one the next night. And he's not going to do it randomly, and he's not going to do it indiscriminately, and he's not just going to throw guys out there. There are methods to Billy Donovan's madness. One thing that I have learned from talking to Billy Donovan basically every day, talking to him a lot, I think it's fair to say that I talk to him a lot about basketball, whether it's just in a reporter setting or whatever it is. And Billy Donovan talks about basketball a lot. You ask him a question, and he will give you a long, thorough, thoughtful answer. And I think if there's one thing that's fair to say, is that Billy Donovan is a steady personality, but he is perfectly steady in changing things up. Billy fully believes that you have to utilize an entire rotation throughout a season, or an entire roster to create a rotation throughout an entire season. He is dead set on that. And this is a team that has a lot of specialists. So you kind of have to do that. You kind of have to adjust on a night-to-night basis. I don't see why Payne will be anything different in that. Like, I don't see why Payne is guaranteed a spot. Like, look, every single player who comes off the Thunder bench has an inconsistent night-to-night role. Every single one of them. Jeremy Grant, we haven't really gotten a sample size on him yet. He's only played a few games. Let's wait to see what happens. We'll call him undefined. But Laverne, the minutes go up and down. Cannery played 3 minutes against Golden State. He played, you know, 21 and against Minnesota, and then he went for 24 points the other night. Like, he goes back and forth depending on who they're playing, depending on what's a good or a bad defensive matchup for him. Kyle Singler was playing early, then he wasn't. Morrow wasn't playing, was playing, now then he wasn't playing. Abrines has been inconsistent. Samaje Kristen is getting his time because somebody needs to play backup point guard. But when you have Payne and you have Kristen, that's something you can platoon too. That's a time where you can play matchups also, and Billy Donovan likes to play matchups. He likes to play matchups. So I think there are going to be some times where Kristen probably does play. I think there are going to be more times, my guess, is when Payne is going to play, because that's just what the hierarchy is going into it. But Billy Donovan is going to be flexible. I'm sure there are things that you can criticize about Billy Donovan, but one thing that is tough to do is criticize him and call him inflexible. He is flexible, maybe sometimes overly flexible. Maybe if guys are consistent in roles, if guys are comfortable in roles, maybe he's overly flexible. But Payne is probably... his minutes are probably going to go back and forth, unless he's just really, really good. Unless he's just really, really good. But he's going to get his shot. They're not just going to bring him back and sit him. You don't do that to a first-round pick who showed promise and then suffered an unfortunate injury. You don't do that. You develop that guy. And that's a Thunder. That's Thunder philosophy. They like developing guys. That's their thing. So I don't think that's just going to randomly stop with Cameron Payne. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. Remember, Thunder, Wednesday night game, that's at home against Toronto. One of their three toughest early season games. They played at the Clippers. They won that game, but that was definitely a tough game. And then obviously at Golden State. This one's right up there with them. The rest of those teams have been, I mean, the Lakers are playing well lately, but they're probably all, the rest of those wins are probably all against non-playoff teams. So this Toronto game is it's a little bit, look, it's hard to say that any early season home game against a non-conference team is a big game. A big game is a wrong word, but it's a nice little test. Maybe not for them. I don't think that's how players approach games. But for us, just from an evaluative standpoint, it's a nice little test. I think it's okay to call it that. So against a good team that's won a lot of games the last 3 or 4 years and a team that has a lot of continuity too. A lot of guys who are familiar with each other. Valanciunas and DeRozan and Lowry. And a lot of guys who have been together for a long time who know each other, who understand each other going up against the Thunder who have adjusted. They've adjusted a lot. They've adjusted personnel. They've adjusted schemes. They've adjusted styles. They've adjusted a lot of different things. They've adjusted roles. And a team that has a lot of continuity can cause some problems. It's a good little test. That's what I thought was going to be the issue with the Clippers. Because the Clippers have so much roster continuity, so much familiarity with each other. I thought that was going to be a problem for them. Obviously, it wasn't. That was the Thunder's best defensive game of the season. Clippers played badly in that game. They played real badly. But that was the best Thunder's best defensive game of the year, in my opinion. And they did it. So another nice little test against Toronto on Wednesday night. I'll be back tomorrow with a wrap-up of that game on Thursday morning. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.